Nylander in the Oilers' own sharp angle. Shot, he scores! Here's Steve McRae, circle fire, he scores! Oh, he's leveled by Andrew Shaw with a thunderous check. Here's a loose puck in front, they score! It's Saad! Shoot, he scores! The Cat connects with a one-timer.
It's time for another episode of Blackhawks Crazy, presented by FanList.
Keith will move it ahead to Shaw, to Doc over the Sabre line, down the left wing, and he scores! Kirby Doc! Here's Doc with the back, and he scores! Kirby Doc! The first two-goal night of Kirby Doc's career.
Chris Bowden and Joe Brand break down the latest storylines surrounding your favorite Chicago hockey team.
Each game I'm getting better and pushing myself to strive to be better.
That's hockey, baby!
Here's Chris Bowden and Joe Brand.
Hi, everyone. It's been way too long, but don't really blame us because there was this thing called the bye week and all-star break and everything like that. But good to be back with you with a fresh edition of a Blackhawks Crazy podcast presented by FanList. Chris Bowden, your pre- and post-game host on 720 WGN Blackhawks Radio, joined as always by Joe Brand, our Blackhawks reporter here. And before we get things going, because there is a lot to talk about, specifically after, as we record after the 2-1 overtime loss to the Boston Bruins Wednesday at the United Center, Blackhawks Crazy podcast is sponsored by FanList. FanList is the best platform for season ticket holders to sell their tickets. Are you a Blackhawks season ticket holder who sells multiple games? Get over to FanList.com/BlackhawksCrazy, spelled FanList.com. FanList partners with multiple ticket marketplaces and lists tickets for sale across all marketplaces all at once. Sites like StubHub, Vivid Seats, SeatGeek, Game Time, and many more. And they do all the work. Multiple marketplaces will increase your ticket exposure, causing tickets to sell faster and for higher prices. Plus, FanList is free to use. Registration and listing tickets are free. And when tickets sell, FanList charges the industry standard, easy for me to say, 15% of the final sale price. It's the same rate that all those major marketplaces charge. There are no hidden costs or added fees to use FanList. It's the best way for you as a season ticket holder to sell your tickets. Go to FanList.com/BlackhawksCrazy to receive a $20 bonus on your first sale. FanList.com/BlackhawksCrazy. We appreciate FanList bringing our presenting sponsors, and I can't talk today. I should have had Joe do the read, but I thought he was doing him a favor by giving him a birthday present. That was my belated birthday present to Joe to take the read off his hands, but I'm sure the folks at FanList will object after that read. And there, Joe, was a lot of objection there at the United Center as to what went down late in regulation and how this game ended. And it all comes down to the referee, Peter McDougal, admitting he made the wrong call on a delayed penalty against Tory Krug, in which Olli Maatta went down. Puck went to his stick, then grazed off his glove, but it was in the neutral zone. That cannot be ruled as a hand pass, as we learned from Troy Murray afterwards. Drake Kajula goes on to score what we believe is a potential game-winning goal with about a minute to go. It's wiped out. Instead, the Blackhawks just get that power play that they're not able to cash in on. And this place did go bonkers. I'm surprised it didn't get a little bit more out of hand, especially after Boston ends up winning it at the 119 mark of overtime.
Yeah, I agree. You're just following the trend of frustration and disappointment with today's game, and that's what I'm sure a lot of fans left here feeling. Really unfortunate break for the Hawks. The good thing is this team did not play that great in the opening periods, and they nearly came away with 2 points and nearly came away with a regulation win against a very, very good Boston Bruins team. And when you look at the past couple of games, the Blackhawks have been very close from taking 6 points out of their last three games. It hasn't gone that way, but we are talking about strides for this team in the positive direction, but it doesn't quite go their way today. So in the long run, you can look at the positives that way. But yes, there's a lot of frustration and a lot of anger for not only the fans. I'm sure plenty of the Blackhawks felt it. You could really see it in Jonathan Toews' demeanor after the game. He did not seem like a happy person whatsoever. Robin Lehner even tweeted out that the team got robbed of a game, but he also lightheartedly sent out the tweet talking about having an interaction with a young fan at the United Center, so that was a good sign. And Jeremy Colliton wasn't too pleased either. Maybe he wasn't as vocal and flamboyantly upset as we've seen a former Blackhawks coach of Joel Quenneville might have been, but a lot of frustration, but I also think that there are things that the Blackhawks didn't do today where they could have had the 2 points regardless of what the official did or did not do in the final minute. So there are some positive strides, but yes, there are still a lot of things for this team to work on.
Yeah, in the end, what's not going to be positive if these 2 points that they let get away in these last two overtimes jump up and bite them, come at the end of the season, because there was an opportunity to really tack on. I think the more disappointing game was the one against Minnesota. It was obvious based on their previous game against Boston when they were blown out at home 6-1 that the team was going to come out hard. Bruce Boudreau backskated him, and they did come out hard on Tuesday against the Blackhawks, who really didn't seem to be ready for that compete level against a team trying to chase them down in the standings. That, to me, was the more disappointing one. This Boston team is great. After the overtime win here on Wednesday, they move into the NHL standings lead, leaping over the Washington Capitals. And in the end, the Blackhawks end up taking 3 or 4 points this season from the Boston Bruins. And it's ironic that they both come in controversial fashion, because in the game in Boston back in December, Blackhawks blow a 3-0 lead. Jonathan Toews could likely be called for a tripping call in overtime before he ends up winning it in that extra session. So it's kind of ironic, the juxtaposition between these two games where things kind of even up, but you always remember what's freshest in your mind. And now the Blackhawks, the real difficult part is they have to sit on this for 3 days, you know, four if you count by the time they drop the puck in Winnipeg on Sunday night. And by that time, since the Hawks squandered 2 points, yeah, the good news is that they salvaged one in each of these games, but then letting it get away in overtime each of the consecutive nights, they miss an opportunity in this jam-packed wild-card race to put themselves in best possible position by the time that they're back in action on Sunday night at Winnipeg. The Vegases and the Calgarys and the Nashvilles and the Winnipeg Jets themselves will be playing two games. And so, granted, this all evens out over the course of an 82-game season, but that's going to add to the urgency at the start of this road trip that is going to be a you-know-what buster, starting in Winnipeg, ending in Winnipeg, and going to Western Canada in between.
Well, I think one of the last things I said in our last podcast was, moving forward, every loss that the Blackhawks have is going to get more and more dramatic and more frustrating because of the position that they're in right now. 2 points out of a wild card spot at this moment. They're only behind the Calgary Flames for that second wild card spot with 58 points, the Flames having 60. But it's that. It's every point is so crucial for the Hawks right now. We're getting closer and closer to that trade deadline. So we're getting to the point of, what are the Hawks going to do? Are they going to become buyers, become sellers? And also, they're just playing better hockey overall. So when you miss out on these opportunities, these last two games, on these 2 points, it's so much easier to see the what could have been rather than earlier this year when the Hawks are getting off to bad starts and there's all these problems with the power play and all you're thinking about is how this team is going to improve in the long run. Those are still the issues at hand, but they're not playing that well in certain circumstances, and they're still coming away with nearly 2 points, at least one. There's out of the 8 of the last 9 games, they've gained at least 1 point. I mean, this is a totally resurged team, and if anything, they're leaving these games with a whole different attitude than earlier in the year.
All right, you hit the locker room. You mentioned Jonathan Toews and Jeremy Calhoun. Let's hear from both of those guys and start with the captain. Obviously, the first question to him was what he was told by Peter McDougal shortly after that whistle was blown and it was called off as a no goal rather than allowing that play to continue on a delayed penalty. Here's a frustrated captain after the 2-1 overtime loss to Boston.
What we got from the officials from that last whistle that blew Kachula's goal dead?
He said it was his mistake.
So they owned up to it?
Yep.
Frustrating then to not get that point considering that happened.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, they got a lot of shots on net, but I think we had our chances too, and comes down to it. And Kadri scores a big goal. I don't know what happened there.
What can you say about Robin? He played out of his mind.
Yeah, he sure did. And obviously, they were really good at finding open guys and making seam passes across ice and a couple empty nets, and he's diving around getting hands and feet and whatever he could on pucks. So he's a huge reason why we had a chance to win.
Frustrating to see Carpenter get the misconduct for that?
Yeah, I don't know. It's not reacting for no reason, so again, I'm not going to get into the officials. I think there's even the call on Smitty there. If it's a hit to the head, I mean, I don't. Why is he not going to the quiet room, as they call it? He's out there on the power play right away. So at least they called the dive on Pasternak. I thought there was another one there too. So if you got hit in the head, that's tough. You don't want to see that, but there's a way you're supposed to deal with that too, I'm pretty sure. So.
Is it a positive that at least you guys are racking up points here and not coming empty-handed here?
Well, I feel like we could have won that game. And last night, Minnesota, same thing. So we're not satisfied with it. We know we need to come up with 2 points every night.
What do you say to the team after the ref?
It is what it is. I think we can do a better job, and myself especially, of not getting frustrated and focusing on the calls that go against us. It's going to happen. So just got to stay in the game.
We know. We have seen the captain get the red face on the ice and scream and yell and drop whatever words that aren't suitable for family viewing and listening. When it comes to him in the locker room, he always resets and chooses his words fairly carefully. That's why he wears the C on a sweater, at least publicly. We don't know what necessarily goes on behind closed doors at certain times. But he took the cool, calm approach, and basically that's all the Blackhawks can do and try and, you know, learn from this and try and put it to good use. And hopefully the greater lesson being is that you don't get yourself in a position where you're chasing the game. And granted, in these last two games, Joe, they ended up the first period scoreless, even though they were dominated in both Minnesota and here at the United Center against Boston. They were able to escape those first periods with no score. But still, it's when other teams have that type of momentum, it is a tough thing to turn around. The Hawks have to just be a little bit more ready at that compete level with what is at stake here and use that as a piece of motivation going forward here.
And I think that's what is in the back of the head of Jonathan Toews and Jeremy Colliton when they're addressing the issue, because they are complete professionals and they know that this team can play better. And if they get off to better starts and they're not outshot in the first period 16-5, despite there being no goals in the opening 20 minutes, they're not playing an uphill battle as the game moves along, and you put yourself in a better situation to win without needing to have Drake Caggiula have the what would have been a go-ahead goal in the final minute of the game. I think they realize that. And, you know, a lot of the reaction from fans on Twitter has been, you know, why didn't we see enough frustration out of Jeremy Colliton? You know, Joel Quenneville would have been seething. And yes, you know, as a fan, that makes you feel better. And yeah, look at this. Look at how crazy, how fun that was. Maybe take some pressure off the players. But, I mean, heck, if you remember Game 7 of that series, Blackhawks and Red Wings, which that instance reminded me of today with the goal being waved off after it looked like the Blackhawks took the lead, Jonathan Toews went into the dressing room and said, all right, guys, let's win this game 3-1. And that's the kind of approach that helped them win that game. So Jonathan Toews has been there. That's why I really appreciated his stance in today's post-game scrum. You could tell he was not happy, though. I mean, the frustration's there. It's not like it's being hidden or bottled up. It's definitely there, but he does take the high road, which in the long run is probably the situation. But again, this team still has things to work on, and it starts with their starts, especially in the last two games. It moves on into the power play. It continues with the lack of consistency. But overall, this team is finding themselves in situations to get 2 points in the final minutes of the game, and that's a good thing moving forward, and that's where you got to give credit to the players and the coach.
Now, you heard him there being asked and talking about Kirby Dach as well. I remember a year ago, there was a discussion going on amongst myself and some other people, who in the Blackhawks organization is going to be the next captain of this team. There didn't appear to be anybody within the organization capable of doing that. And I'm not by any means pushing Jonathan out the door. I think there's a lot of great hockey left in him. As long as he is here, he will wear the C on his sweater. But from what we've seen from a 19-year-old kid, Kirby Dach, when that day does come, I think everyone is pretty excited and pretty encouraged by what we've seen here in the first almost 50 games of his NHL career with what he has shown, that he is capable of being that guy, both in performance on the ice and the way he handles himself off the ice. And after that long stretch of 27 games where he had a single point all of a sudden the points are starting to come. He's been given a little bit greater responsibility with a line, you know, getting bumped up in the lineup, centering more recently Brandon Saad and Patrick Kane, giving him more opportunity to get on the score sheets, getting between those two guys. And once again, he comes up with another point. And over the course, I forgot what the numbers were, but over the course of the last five or six games, he is averaging more than a point a game. Four takeaways as well. He got rocked again by Zdeno Chara in this game. You can almost count on one of those per game, but the kid always allows himself to bounce back up, not let it bother him, put his head down, and continue grinding. And I think he's continuing to impress a lot of people here.
There are so many positives coming from Kirby Doc's game over the past, over the year overall, but especially over the past couple of weeks. And it's funny you bring that up, the point of the future captain of this team. I never heard about that point. It's very intriguing. And to think, that was Jonathan Toews when he was named the captain. He was 19 years old. That's still astounding. But Kirby Doc just has this hockey IQ. He's got this physical and mental toughness that you mentioned with the long stretch of not having any points, or at least just one point. Man, this guy just seems more and more like a polished veteran every day when he's still in his rookie year. Again, it's the physicality with him being such a huge center that he just embraces being in the NHL day after day. He takes those hits like crazy and still gets back on his feet. Yesterday in the game against Minnesota, when he had that beautiful move and nearly scored but just missed wider than that, and I'm sure you saw him skating back to the bench and screaming a explicative word we can't say right now. Oh, it's a podcast, but I'll hold back. I mean, that's the kind of standard he puts on himself. So you're seeing a 19-year-old with huge aspirations and a guy that has just a ceiling that might be endless. That's an incredible guy to have on your team. And I know some of the other draft picks that other teams have selected maybe haven't made it up to the NHL level yet after Kirby Doc, so this still has to have a few years before everything's all played out. But, you know, you got to give Stan Bowman credit on this one, because this is a guy that is making an impact right now as a rookie. But I also feel with the injuries the Blackhawks have had this year, the struggles, that allows Kirby Doc to play a lot and get a lot of consistent play and gain confidence, because if he goes through a stretch of not scoring that well, it's not going to be that easy for the Hawks to send him down. So when you have that built-in confidence where you know you have a little wiggle room, I think that can do wonders for a young hockey player, and it's doing so.
Yeah, quiet, calm confidence for a 19-year-old kid. The specific numbers that I was trying to grasp a little bit earlier, 6 points now over the last five games for Doc. And you know what? Once he gets in the hands of Paul Goodman in an offseason or two, he's going to be the one dishing out the punishment, and he's not going to be the one falling down just as much on that frame once it starts filling out. So reason to be excited for one 19-year-old, a little bit of concern as far as the other 19-year-old is concerned. Adam Boqvist scored in that game against Minnesota, appeared to injure a shoulder once again. But once again, Jeremy Colliton, as you'll hear momentarily here, among other things, saying it does not appear to be a severe injury. Adam was, sitting out one game the last time that happened against New Jersey right before Christmas there. And hopefully it's something as minor for Adam Boqvist, as the Hawks had a roll with five defensemen the rest of the way in that game after he was knocked out 6 minutes into the second period. So we've heard from Jonathan Toews. Let's now hear from Jeremy Colliton, who, among other things, addresses the officials' call, what he was told, but here are his opening comments to start things out after the 2-1 overtime loss to Boston.
It was a hard game. They're an excellent team, and I thought we got better as the game went on. Third period was probably our best period. Once we started shooting some more pucks, I think it looked a little better for us. I think that's what was missing in the first. We gave up some chances to put pucks in the net, and when you do that, you give yourself a chance to get a bounce. Their first power play they had was really good, put pressure on us, and they gained momentum from that. But again, I thought we got better as the game went on. Nice to see the power play come through, and also nice to see us, we went toe-to-toe with them in the third, and easily could have come out with 2 points, even though obviously Robin made some big saves to keep us in it earlier.
What did Jeremy tell you about the disallowed goal?
Yeah, they made a mistake. They blew the whistle. And, they not much you can say after that. It's done. So,
what about Carpenter? What was that? The misconduct?
Yeah, he got cross-checked in the face after the on the face-off, and you know, wasn't happy about it. So,
you have any update on Bo Quist?
Obviously, didn't come back. I don't think it's anything super serious, but we'll know more in the next day or so.
What have you thought about Kirby Dach's play now? Like every game, just seems to be getting better and better.
Yeah, no, he's been great, and it's really helping our team, and there's more there. You know, he's close. You know, he creates a lot, and just, you know, hasn't quite been able to finish, but starting to produce offensively. But, you know, for me, it's more, you know, his two-way game just adds some depth to our team, and I know he's going to keep getting better.
What have you thought about
robbed when the referee admits that they screwed up like that?
Well, it's tough. I mean, it's disappointing, but you know, it'll be another night where we come out on the other end of it. These things have a way of evening out, but it's disappointing because it would have been a big 2 points for our team. To, you know, they outplayed us early on. I thought we got better as the game went on. They're an excellent team, and we grinded it out. That's the type of you know, home game that we haven't played so much of, where it doesn't necessarily pretty, but we find a way. So you know, these points are big.
This game feel similar to last night's game in terms of not having the legs early on, or was it about them being?
No, they're a good team, and they challenged us. It was a challenge for our guys, and especially when we go down to 5D, we played most of the game, or, you know, the last half of the game at 5D. That's with the way they forecheck and you know, the type of sharpness you need defensively, especially when their top line's on. It was, you know, I'm happy that we found a way to grind it out. You know, of course, we want to play better. We want to have more of the play, but again, I thought the third period we were right with them.
What you saw from the power play tonight?
Yeah, it was much better. Mentality was much better, just willingness to shoot the puck, and you give yourself a chance, and then all of a sudden we got some pretty good looks just off broken plays, and then there's the extra passes there once you recover a puck.
How do you keep things in perspective with all the emotion at the end of the game and calm things down and make it not turn into a bigger issue than it?
Yeah, well, I mean, we have some time. You know, we don't have to come out here right away, which is nice, but it's done. So obviously, you know, you have conversation with the referee at the time, and they know how we feel. So we're not happy, of course, but now we got to prepare for the next one.
I know we've talked about it all year, but they have the goalie performances like Crawford and Leonard. Yep. What's that done for you guys?
Yeah, it's huge. I mean, they had a lot of the play in the first period, and Robin was great. So allowed us to, we gained confidence from that we're in every game, as long as we can you know, not beat ourselves, and that's something we're doing better and better. You know, obviously we want to carry more of the play, especially at home, but that's an excellent team.
It's Jeremy Carlton after the 2-1 overtime loss to the Boston Bruins, and we talked going into this game against the Bruins how special teams were going to be key. Bruins red hot. They came in 6-for-14 on the power play their last three games and had killed off 19 of 20 over the previous six. Well, the Blackhawks' penalty kill had been red hot, and it stayed that way when Boston went to the power play. The Blackhawks' PK, a perfect 3-for-3 on the night. They came up big when they needed to, so they neutralized that. And they also, hallelujah, came up with a power play goal. If not for that, they wouldn't even be able to come up with this 1 point on the night. Alex DeBrincat finally getting off the schneid as he scores on the power play for the 9th time this season. 9 of his 13 goals have come on the man advantage. So at least that broke through. That was on their first chance. They went 0-for-3 the rest of the night. So they're 7-for-57 the last 18 games. And even on that shot, Joe, DeBrincat actually hit the goaltender and it deflected off of him. But you know what? He'll take it any way he can right now, and the power play will as well. But it's really interesting. It was the power play a year ago when this team fought its way back into the playoff picture that this club was really riding the back of the power play. They got red hot. Now it's almost the complete opposite, and you just wonder, with the penalty kill going as it is, more in general overall defensive responsibilities taken care of, the goaltending that you have, you're thinking, you start getting greedy. And man, if the power play is able to at least click at a 15 to 20% click, you know, how much that would help this team right now. And you hope at least this is a step in the right direction. But again, we've been seeing this all season long on this power play unit too.
The only way to have a greater come to fruition today is if Jonathan Toews had an assist on Alex DeBrincat's goal for finally getting that 800th point, and then Duncan Keith cashes in for his 100th goal for the next power play. But yeah, it's good signs to see. It's good to see the DeBrincat get back on the score sheet. It's good to see them finally convert on the power play, and against one of the best penalty-killing teams, nonetheless, against the Boston Bruins. That's why I was kind of intrigued coming into today's game on, you know, what the Hawks' approach would be, what their intensity would be, if it would tick up a little bit, knowing that you're going against one of the best special teams in the Boston Bruins. And they took care of business with the penalty kill. That looked great. A lot of structure. I forget who it was. It was Olimata saying that Boston's good. Clearly, they're a great team. We saw them come in today, but they're a lot of one and done with their offense. They got a lot of rush early on, and then they have a chance, maybe two, and then the Hawks are able to get the puck out of the zone. So that is kind of the way they had with their power play, and that gives them the extra resurgence to create more plays. And you wanted to see the Hawks catch that idea, because I think Troy Murray said Boston's not doing anything special with their power play. They're bringing the puck in the zone and they're firing off shots. And I know that's what we've said time and time again, but that's what happens, or rather, when the Hawks score, it's because that's what happens, and that's what happened in today's game. And then, you know, later on, it was the same issue. I thought the passing was a little off for the Hawks today, too, not even with the power play, just overall. You just still see guys trying to make too perfect of a pass. Something about Brandon Saad, with him being on Patrick Kane's line. Patrick Kane is so good at always finding Brandon Saad. That's just his vision on the ice, and always finding him in an open lane. It almost looks like Saad is trying to do that. He's trying to always find Patrick Kane, whether it's to return the favor or just to generate the scoring chance. But, I mean, we saw yesterday, or the game against Minnesota, when he missed a wide-open shot, just to get that extra pass. So I still think that plays a factor. It's these skilled players that have so much talent that are just trying to get that extra pass, but they just got to start peppering the goalie a little bit more, because once these guys get to the crease a little bit more, like we've seen Dominic Kubalik do and we've seen Kirby Dach do, these are the young guys that are following along the fundamentals, and if they're able to just keep that consistent, then hopefully they can get the ball rolling on it.
And to be fair, too, part of what that out-of-sync look offensively with the Blackhawks on Wednesday night has to do with what Boston does defensively, because structurally with what they do at their sticks, I mean, they are a tough team to play against. They come in first in the league in goals against average, great goalie tandem at that, but with that defensive structure that they have, you know, with all five guys on the ice, that is a humongous challenge for any particular opponent, and for the Blackhawks, who have been inconsistent as they have been on offense this year, they're going to run into that, and I don't know if it was necessarily surprising, but you do need more out of that. All right, Ernie Skatton, tell us what's coming up next.
Score! Slapshot questions. Tweet your questions to the guys at BodaTweets and at Joe_Brand1 for your questions to be read on the podcast.
Thank you, Mr. Skatton. A little bit more about Ernie in just a moment, but let's take care of business here first. I do want to circle back to Ernie here in a couple of seconds, but a couple of hashtag slapshots questions that were fired our way. And again, people, come on, we need more questions. We tweet these out the day of games. We've got a couple of them here that we want to address. First one is from Mike, and it was basically more a comment in saying if the Hawks lose this game, and in fact that they did. This was shortly after that official's call in which they decided to call the penalty rather than continue the play on a delayed penalty call involving Olimata, in which Drake Kajula scored. The officials will be to blame here. The NHL should set an example here. The only thing I can say about that, yeah, it was awful. The officials admitted the mistake, but with all the video replay that we're going through, you wish and wonder it would have happened in this instance. But you can't pick and choose. It's human nature. This game goes at such a fast pace that unless you stop and dissect everything, you're going to have your mistakes. And as we talked about at the start, it is ironic that the Blackhawks got away with a call in the first game against the Bruins in Boston, and it was the Bruins that got away with the call here. It's funny how things even out. It's not so funny when it happens to you most recently compared to your distant memory. But that doesn't mean I'm happy about it. But unless you're going to stop and start and look at every single replay of what can go wrong, I'm not sure if I'm happy the officials admitted their mistake. I guess that's the right thing to do. But they got off that ice real quick when the game did end. So, Mike, thanks for your comment. I'm certain you are not alone there. And our buddy Margo checked in, and she wanted to ask us our assessment of Kubalik's play lately. Seems to have cooled off in the scoring. And, yes, he has since the All-Star break. May have been the worst thing that happened to Dominic, but, again, he was on such an incredible tear there before the All-Star break. These are the ways of the rookies. And not just the rookies. Even Jonathan has cooled off from an offensive standpoint here, his line mate. So that, I think that kind of goes hand in hand as well. Some of the other guys have been a little bit quieter. We were wondering when we did our last podcast, okay, even though they lost that game against Florida, is this really a great time to take a break? Well, they came back Saturday, had that thrilling game against Arizona. You're thinking, no, okay, all is good. But now we've seen a little bit of sputtering here in the last couple of games. And, yeah, Kubalik, he is a rookie. So he's experienced the highs and lows of the NHL season so far. And yes, I think we have seen better from Dominic Kubalik, and hopefully he gets better here in short order, especially at some point during this road trip.
Again, you're dealing with another rookie who just came into the whole Calder Trophy conversation a few months into the season. I mean, he wasn't right away an impact as soon as he joined the team. It took a couple months, but then once he got on that role, it almost seemed like he wasn't going to not score a goal another day in his life. So I agree with you. I think it has to do with an overall little bit of a lull offensively with this team, being on the same line as Jonathan Toews also plays a role. But the other thing is you got to expect some growing pains for a young kid like he is. And I think you can hardly even call it a growing pain because, mentioned it before, he and Kirby Dach, these young kids are still doing fundamental things right. They're still getting to the net. They're still constantly peppering the goalie or, you know, just creating offense. And even if that doesn't entail them scoring a goal or creating an assist, they're still helping out the long run. And that's something that Jeremy Colleton was talking about Alex DeBrincat's play coming into this game. He's still helping the team generate chances despite it not showing up on the score sheet. His line mate Dylan Strome mentioned that earlier this year too. So, yes, you would love to see Dominic Kubalik continue his hot surge scoring goals, but again, it's a young guy going through the grind of an NHL season, so this is going
to
happen.
Yeah, unless you're a wonder kid, it's a little difficult to expect this to carry through 82 games. You got to give him a little bit of slack. And this is what comes also. You're going to see these ebbs and flows individually in each of these games. There's a certain excitement level about your Kubaliks and your Docks and your DeBrincats and your Stroms. And Dylan's another guy who's going to have to get going coming out of that injury as well. Adam Boqvist. You're seeing the future here in the mix, in the midst of a playoff chase, them needing to perform well, but they're also young and going through this for the first time. And while they give you a certain excitement level about what the potential is for the future, they're also going through these growing pains, and you'd like to set the bar and for them to meet the bar real high. I think realistically, you can't necessarily expect that too. Now, circling back to Ernie, everyone with us here on the Blackhawks Crazy Podcast and the WGN family are wishing the very best for him and his family. Ernie's wife suffered a medical emergency about a week and a half ago, and finds herself in a real battle here. And but she has, you know, made encouraging progress here over what she is facing over the course of the last week and a half, and is providing a lot of optimism with the steps she has taken. There is still a long road ahead, but I know a lot of our Blackhawks Crazy Podcast listeners only know Ernie by his voice, and a great voice it is, but he's a great guy as well. And if you're so inclined to send out or give a good thought or a wish to Ernie and his family, that his wife can come through this in the best possible way possible, I'm sure he would greatly appreciate it, and we would as well. Okay, speaking of medical situations, Duncan Keith for years now has had his Keith Relief Foundation. It helps people facing medical emergencies, the people themselves, but also the families, and that's where this really grows, in which Duncan has gotten behind a cause where he joins with the Blackhawks Foundation and Ronald McDonald House to support families who have children in medical emergencies and are either here in Chicago and need to stay close to a hospital or come from out of town. And when those children have long medical conditions or long conditions that require long medical care and assistance, Ronald McDonald House, the Keith Relief Foundation, Blackhawks Foundation, all pitch in to try and help ease that financial burden. He has had a Keith Relief concert just about every year here for the course of, I don't know, 8, 9, 10 years. It's always a country musician, and it happened a few weeks ago over at Joe's on Weed, and that afforded us the opportunity to catch up with Duncan and go a little bit more in depth with him than we normally would during the course of a season when he's busy with practice and workouts and games. And I had a chance to catch up with him on a variety of topics, from this being year 15 in the league for him, what the fun quotient is for him now compared to 5, 10 years ago when he was winning Stanley Cups or when he first broke in. I also had a chance to talk to him about teaming with a 19-year-old defensive partner, as well as talk to him about his longtime defensive partner, Brent Seabrook, who is done for the season here and whose future has a question mark hanging over. We talked about a lot of other things as well, but we began our conversation here with Duncan about his cause, Keith Relief, how he initially got involved in it, and how close it is to his heart. Here's Duncan Keith from a couple of weeks ago at the Keith Relief concert.
Well, I never really expected it to end up being this big of an event and a charity. We started it, this is the seventh year we've had it. It was basically started as a way to kind of give back to people in Chicago, and the fans. Felt like I'd been here for several years playing for the Blackhawks, and I always kind of felt some responsibility to give back and help out. Feel like being an NHL player, that's kind of a platform you have that comes with a bit of responsibility in that regard. And we looked at a few different ideas as far as what the charity would be about, and decided that this was very worthwhile cause that would help a lot of people that really really needed help. And it's helping a lot of families in medical crisis, where the bills or the cost of staying away from home. We've partnered up with Ronald McDonald House Charities, so we've made a lot of good things happen with that. With Ronald McDonald House, we've sponsored a floor, so knowing that families are comfortable here when they're in Chicago, to have a place to stay when they're forced to be in the hospital somewhere they don't really want to be, provides a level of comfort. And a lot of families over the years have had different situations where they've needed help with their medical bills, and it's been very rewarding to be able to help them out.
Is there any way to compare the feeling of accomplishment you have from organizing a night like this and feeling how much it benefits people as it does to winning a game or a playoff series or anything like that? Is there a comparison?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's certainly it's certainly different type of feeling. Hockey as a competitive athlete, that will always be a certain feeling that is tough to replicate. But this type of feeling that when you're helping people and you're doing it for a good cause, and you're seeing people come together to for the cause, not just myself, there's been a lot of people put a lot of work into this, and the fans to come and you guys to be here, I appreciate it. And it's all for raising money to help people. And I think as human beings, there's no real that's what it's all about, helping one another.
I know it's always been tied to country music, so if like a metal band or a balladeer or an R&B performer or a rapper says, I want to do a concert for Keith Relief, are you cool with that too?
Well, they felt like they wanted to do that, for sure. I love country music. I'm a huge country music fan, and so we kind of settled on country, but definitely open to to different genres. But, you know, I think we're happy with the way it's gone with the country. We've been fortunate. Ed Warm, who owns this place, has great connections and with country music artists. And, you know, we're pretty lucky in that regard. And this venue is probably the perfect venue to have, you know, the event. So, you know, we're excited to be here and we're excited to get it going.
All right, somehow we've gotten to year 15 in the NHL. Are you having as much fun as you did 5 years ago, 10 years ago, even 15 years ago? And how important is it to keep that fun element for you?
Yeah, I think I am probably being able to have more fun. Probably able to separate things a little bit better than I used to when I was younger. I'm able to take care of my body better, to be able to rest, recover the proper way, so I can have energy to enjoy doing things outside of hockey. And you know, I enjoy the different kind of phases that have happened throughout my career, being from a younger guy to a guy that's, you know, in his mid-20s to late 20s, where you're kind of in the mix with everybody, and then now as an older guy on the team, I enjoy that, the role as well. I just take it as it comes and try to be my best on the ice and have lots of fun off the ice.
How has there been a point in recent years when the winning hasn't come as often, where it's less fun? And along those lines, I'm also going to ask you, you know, how much does having a 6-7-year-old little boy at home, how much does that help out?
Well, I think that's probably the biggest change, you know, for me to enjoy and see things from a different perspective. You know, when I see fans and I see kids, it's definitely different than when I was 20. I really feel like I connect better with kids now that I have kids. And then the parents also on top of that, because I'm a parent myself. So, you know, hockey, anytime you're losing is frustrating, but we're definitely fortunate to be a part of a great organization, from Rocky Wirth, John McDonough, you know, the way we're treating this organization and the city of Chicago. There's a lot to be thankful for, and a lot to have a positive outlook. You know, it's come back from a win or a loss, and no matter what, the dog's happy and so are the kids.
Speaking of kids, you know, you're paired with a 19-year-old right now, but what do you see in terms of his ceiling, especially defensively? You know, everyone kind of knows the offense is there, but what's his ceiling like defensively as he kind of learns the ropes around the fly?
I think he could be great defensively. I think ultimately those are mentalities and things that come down to each individual and how bad you want to be a good defenseman, good defensively. Certainly he has offensive ability, and I love the way he can skate and read the play and make plays, and his patience and poise. You know, I really enjoy playing with him. I think he complements my game because the way he plays, I think, lends into the way I want to play, which is a puck possession game and hanging on to pucks and making plays so we can enter into the zone with speed. You know, as far as defensively, I think that's always a work in progress for myself as well. And, you know, you're constantly trying to make the proper reads. And, you know, sometimes you do and sometimes bad, you know, mistakes happen. But it's just the way it is. I think we're all trying to get better. And I certainly think that he's got that potential.
As we wrap up here, how much have you thought about Brent's impact on you personally and professionally? And have you ever thought about if you've been able to accomplish everything you have in this game without him by your side for so long?
Yeah, no, it's crazy. I mean, now that he's been injured and he's been out for a little bit, you definitely kind of look back a little bit and think, like, God, we were, you know, playing together for 1,000-plus games and never really missed too many games. And so, you know, he's been a huge part of my career, and I think he will continue to be a huge part of my career. And I'd like to think that we've helped each other out. But I know having him, you know, being able to ride shotgun alongside him through this the past 15 years, it's been couldn't ask for anything better. Couldn't ask for a better teammate, a better guy to do it alongside with. We've got everybody knows we have a great friendship, great relationship, and you know I'm looking forward to having him back in the lineup when he's healthy and he's ready to go to help us get some wins.
Hope you guys enjoyed that conversation with Duncan Keith at his concert. Don't get a whole lot of opportunity to sit down and go in-depth with Duncan on a number of topics. Was pleased to get the opportunity to do that as well a few weeks ago with Duncan, and hope I provided you a little bit more insight into the kind of guy he is. Even though he's been around now for 15 years, he's won 3 Cups. You know, a couple Norris trophies, a Conn Smythe trophy as well, but one of the greatest Blackhawks of all time. A little bit more from Duncan Keith behind the scenes at that concert. So as we wrap up here, Joe, first of all, how was the birthday? Boy, what a start. You know, your birthday is every year, but boy, 2020, what a busy opening month. I'm trying to, your birthday was February or was it January? January? It was January. What a month for Joe Brand.
Yeah, big month. First birthday as a married human.
And compared to what, a married caterpillar?
That's correct, yeah. Well, now I'm a butterfly, I guess, then, huh? I got the flu, so I wasn't able to do too much. Yeah, it was a lot of fun, not really.
Did it come wrapped in wrapping paper?
No, it caught me by surprise on Saturday when I had a few shifts, so I had to grind out one of them and cancel another, and then just rest up Sunday and Monday. Did a little dinner out in Pilsen, some Mexican food, and just slowly took it down. So 29 was not too thrilling for me. So I don't know. I'm at the age now, and I'm sure people are grimacing at this, but I'm at the age now where I'm not too happy about my birthday. So really still.
And this was your 29th.
My first 29th, as they call it. But it was a decent week. It was, you know, friends and family. Got to see them before or after the big day. But nothing too exciting.
Well, I hope you appreciate my gift to you, and that was reading the fan list read here. I still can't talk, and I probably should have let you do it. We should probably do a take two and probably O fan list after that. So as we wrap up here and look ahead, Blackhawks. This was the first of three home games in February. The next one doesn't come for 2 weeks when the Rangers are here. And, then it's a back-to-back home situation because then Nashville comes in, and then they're done for the rest of the month as well before a real heavy home March schedule. But looking for the here and now, this upcoming week, the Blackhawks open it up Sunday at Winnipeg, Tuesday at Edmonton, Wednesday at Vancouver, then next Saturday at Calgary, and they wrap it up again next Sunday at Winnipeg. The bookend Winnipeg 5-game stretch over 8 days. When we look at this, Joe, 3 wins, they're going to start this thing off behind all 5 of those teams, unless Winnipeg finds a way to lose both of their contests. And they could lose Thursday at St. Louis. That's, of course, extremely possible. They come home on Saturday afternoon to host an Ottawa team before hosting the Blackhawks on Sunday evening. So in all likelihood, the Blackhawks are looking up at all 5 of these teams. I think that's a slam dunk. So are you looking for at least 3 wins anyway by hook or crook, 3 regulation, 3 any way you can get them and hold the other team down, you know, to 1 point while you get 2? I think if you come away with 3 2-point situations and hopefully a couple of them at least are regulation wins, you end the trip that way, I think you're still in pretty good business, even though you're probably still not in one of those wild card spots.
Well, sure, on paper, they beat Winnipeg twice, and they beat Calgary, and they lose to the heavier hitters of Vancouver or Edmonton. But if we've known or learned anything all year long, is that's not how it plays out. It's always been the reverse. The Hawks end up playing well to their competition, which you kind of saw today towards the end of the game against Boston, and then you know they hit their struggles again against any team. But I think you're right, but I also think that's just any road trip or homestand you look into. You got to take the majority of it. And again, after the All-Star break, the Hawks have gained at least 1 point in their last 3 games. They've gained at least 1 point in 8 out of their last 9, and you know that includes that 5-game winning streak they had before falling to Florida before the All-Star break. So the good news once again is they're on the road. They've played better on the road than at home this year. The other good news is you can kind of say that they're in control of their own destiny. because you're right, they're looking up at a lot of those teams fighting for a playoff spot. So their play will not only dictate where they sit in the playoffs, I guess this kind of all is cohesive, but it all also will dictate what they will do come trade deadline time, or maybe not. Maybe they stand pat. I mean, that's very possible, too, with the way that these past couple weeks have been going. So, I mean, it's going to be a very interesting time, and it's going to be a very crucial time. And, again, it's going to be a very frustrating time when the Blackhawks lose a game. Fans need to know that. Every loss that's going to happen forward is going to seem more crucial than the last. And I think we really saw a good example of that today with nearly getting 2 points against one of the best teams, if not the best team in the Boston Bruins. But buckle up. It's going to be a ride.
Yeah, and I think the most important, and you shouldn't. I use the phrase set the bar a lot. You shouldn't set the bar at being, you better not fall flat on your face on this five-game trip. But if they do, then that definitely steers the season in an entirely different direction here with the opponents that they are facing here, and that's why it is so important. And we will have a little bit better gauge when we bring you our next Blackhawks Crazy podcast, and that's going to come your way next Thursday after the Blackhawks are done with the first three legs of this trip, Winnipeg, Edmonton, and Vancouver. We'll get together on Thursday the 13th and try to post something for you by that afternoon as we take a look at what the Blackhawks have done in the first three stops of that road trip. And we'll have perhaps a little bit better sense. Better not be looking at three straight regulation losses right there. It's going to take an entirely different tone there. So we will see. And the logjam, the bar fight continues in the Western Conference with those wild card positions. And it's not only wild card for those teams in the Pacific, but it's also jockeying for the first, second, and third place positions as well. So it's been too long, but I'm glad we're back. Thanks for joining us on this Blackhawks Crazy podcast presented by FanList. We want to thank FanList as being the presenting sponsor. Also, thank our producer, Curtis Koch, for all the great work he does behind the scenes, Ernie Skatton as well. And most importantly, thank you for listening. We encourage you to subscribe on iTunes and Apple Podcasts. We'll also send out the link on our Twitter accounts. It's Joe_Brand1. The number one, Joe_Brand1, and I'm at Bowden Tweets. And you can also find the link through WGNRadio.com when all these podcasts post. But again, we encourage you to subscribe on iTunes and Apple Podcasts and leave a review as well. Until next Thursday, thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you then.
How about that?
They won it.
The Hawks win the Stanley Cup.
Thanks for listening to the Blackhawks Crazy Podcast. Tell a friend, subscribe, and join the conversation. And follow the guys on Twitter, @BowdenTweets and @Joe_Brand1.
That was great!